I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, college basketball's all-time winningest coach, Pat Summitt, talks about her life around the hardwood and about chasing career win number 1,000. It's our Wisdom Watch conversation, and we're going to have it in just a few minutes. But first, it's been 2 weeks since Barack Obama became president, and he's had some stumbles. Three of his top-level nominees had to withdraw, but still, he has maintained an enviable approval rating. The House approved his first major bill, the $819 billion economic stimulus package. He signed a popular pay equity bill supported by women's groups, and the team he liked won the Super Bowl. But not everyone has jumped on the Obama bandwagon. Last week, we spoke to a group of progressive liberal writers who are keeping a critical eye on the Obama administration. Today, we're having a similar conversation with a group of conservative thinkers. We're calling these conversations the Loyal Opposition. I'm joined by Matthew Continetti, associate editor at the Weekly Standard, a conservative political journal. Vin Weber, a former Republican congressman from Minnesota and now a Republican strategist. And Rehan Salam, who's an associate editor at The Atlantic and co-author of Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. They're all here with me in our studio in Washington. Thanks, everybody, for stopping in.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
I want to start by asking each of you your thoughts about the whole Obama phenomenon. Matthew, I'm going to start with you because you and I were together at the Democratic convention
right.
in Denver. You're a pretty cool customer.
What a scene.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about the scene?
Yeah. Well, the scene is Obama is incredibly popular. I mean, he's kind of graduated to another level of political superstardom. And everybody likes him, including, you know, more than a few Republicans.
Do you like him?
I like him very much. I disagree with a lot of his agenda, but I like him personally. And I think you find that a lot on the right.
Is that a good thing for the country or not?
It's a good thing for the country. It's nice to have some comedy in our discussions, especially when we're talking about the executive, the president of the United States. You know, he's the head of state and the head of government. But what we're finding, though, is that that kind of good feeling and all that goodwill isn't necessarily translated to the Democratic Congress. And I think Obama made a big mistake, actually, in letting Congress take the lead on his first major piece of legislation, the stimulus package, which is really going to run up into some serious opposition in the Senate, it looks like.
Okay. Well, let's talk more about that in a minute, but we'll bring the rest of the folks in. Rehan, what about you? What are your thoughts about the Obama phenomenon, and how do you think about it as a conservative? First of all, do you like the guy?
I think that, like Matt, I'm happy to see him reaching out to a wide variety of folks. For example, he said that he's interested in ideas from across the ideological spectrum. He said that if you have a better idea about stimulus, he's open to it. You saw that in the stimulus discussions, he was open to a mix of tax cuts and spending. And I think that that's, you know, broadly encouraging. But I'd say that I'm less interested in what's going on with Obama and the Democrats and more interested, as you'd expect, with what's going on at the Republican side. Are people taking on the right lessons? You know, do we have viable candidates running in 2009 and 2010? I think the Democrats, and you've seen this with the congressional Democrats and the stimulus bill, they're going to get away with whatever they can get away with. They're going to try to push spending priorities that they've, you know, failed to push for a long period of time. And that's entirely understandable.
Yeah, because 10 beats 9.
Right.
They have the votes.
And so are Republicans going to be able to hold them to account effectively? Are they going to be able to articulate, you know, meaningful alternatives?
Okay, I want to talk more about that in a minute, about what is your job right now? What does it mean to be in the loyal opposition? But I want to bring Vin Weber into the conversation. What are your thoughts? You've been around a while, a few years longer than these other gentlemen. What are your thoughts about the Obama?
We don't have to get more specific than that.
No.
I agree with both these guys. You're probably expecting to hear a lot of that today. I would go back to one thing that Matthew said, though, and add to it, he made the point that the president's enormous popularity has not yet clearly translated to popularity for the Democratic Party or the Democratic Congress. I would add to that, it's not clear to what extent the president's personal popularity is going to translate into support for the president's policies. We don't know that for sure yet, but the handling of the stimulus package that we've talked about so far might raise some questions there. In other words, people think that President Obama is a wonderful change of direction for the country. But, you know, the campaign was so much about being anti-Bush and not Republican or not Bush, and really not about very specific policy changes of direction. When President Reagan came into office in 1981, similar time of change, similar time of challenge, he did have the advantage of having run very explicitly on some of the major things that he wanted to get through the Congress, most notably the across-the-board tax cut. President Obama has a more vague mandate, a large mandate for change, but it's much more vague and not specifically related as much so to what he said in the campaign.
And I was going to ask you about Ronald Reagan. That's actually where I was headed, because I think the analogy holds that here's a man who was personally popular, but I think many people forget how polarizing a political figure he was. There are people who, to this day, will tell you, love him, hated his policies. Do you see an analogy there?
President Reagan was not that popular when he came into office. He had majority support, and there was support for change because the economy was in deep trouble then, as it is now. But what he had was a fairly specific agenda that he'd been championing, not just in his campaign for president, but for many, many years. And when he went to the country and said, you know, this is what you've elected me to do, tell the Congress to go along with it, they did. It was not the magnitude of his popularity, but its linkage to a specific agenda he'd been championing that gave President Reagan great leverage. And we have yet to see how that will affect this administration. He comes in with great popularity, but achieved in a little bit different way.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We're having a conversation with the loyal opposition, conservative thinkers, and we're talking about what direction the Republican Party and conservatives need to take now. I'm speaking with Matthew Continetti, Rehan Salam, and Vin Weber. I'm interested to hear how each of you conceive of your role now as thinkers, as strategists. And one of the things that makes this come to mind is I got an email from a listener the other day who objected to an interview I did with former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. And she said, we don't need to hear from him. You know, the elections are over. The people have decided. And in essence, she was saying, I don't want to hear from anybody I don't already agree with. You know, she and I had our own dialogue around that. But the fact is, his popularity does present a certain challenge for you. And Matt, as you were talking about, the fact that the Republicans did get a bit of a drubbing in the last election.
Right.
What's your job now?
Well, I think the job of conservatives in general and Republicans in particular is to be, as you said, the loyal opposition. And I think they've done a fairly good job of that in these first 2 weeks. I mean, it's hard to judge a presidency on 2 weeks, but I think they've done a fairly good job. And that
Can I just jump in on one thing?
Of course.
This whole question of the we were talking about the stimulus package, and the fact is that no House Republicans voted for the stimulus package. 11 Democrats voted with the Republicans. A lot of people in the blogosphere and the people who write to us are furious about this.
That's right.
Say that's not being the loyal opposition. You're
that's
being
amazing.
Obstructionist.
That's amazing.
You're
to
being
me.
Obstructionist.
No, obstructionist is when you're actually holding up legislation.
Right.
And that's what the Republicans are doing is clearly not obstructionist. In fact, the Senate leader, Mitch McConnell, has said he's not going to filibuster the stimulus. Now, I think they are going to aim for a similar no vote in this legislation. But being the loyal opposition is two things. It's being loyal and it's being in the opposition. And if you think that the stimulus package is currently conceived is flawed, that it won't help the economy, that in fact it's just an excuse on the part of the Democratic majority to barrel through this legislative agenda, as Rehan was saying, that's been kind of bottled up for a long time, then you have every reason to vote against it. And so I find it funny, actually. I know exactly the type of thing that you're talking about. You get the sense that for a lot of liberals, they haven't recognized that Republicans are no longer in power. They have to kind of reach this mental leap. They have to make this quantum leap and understand that they are now the governing party. They're the ones responsible. And basically, you know, the Republicans aren't of much use. I mean, it's their time to kind of go re-examine their policies, their principles, see how they can get back. But really, the major test for how the Republicans are going to get back into power is how well the Democrats do over these next 2 to 4 years.
Rehan, what's your job now?
I was listening to the radio, and I was listening to John Boehner on NPR, in fact, talking about the stimulus package. And it was amazing because at one point he was asked about climate change. And he said that, you know, climate change is a serious problem. We need to do something about it. But we also need to pay careful attention to the costs. And I thought, that's amazing. If only Republicans had been saying this for years, this is exactly the kind of thing he should be saying. And when he was talking about some of the spending, the stimulus, it was just very careful. It was very nuanced. He wasn't saying that we don't need to spend. He wasn't saying that we don't need to invest in our infrastructure. He was saying that we need to be pragmatic about it and we need to be sure that the money is actually going to be responsive to our real long-term needs. Alice Rivlin, you know, a Democrat, noted Democrat, was in the Clinton administration, said we should think about separating out this bill into two separate bills, one that's about long-term investment and one that's about stimulus. I think that the loyal opposition isn't just about the Republican Party. It's about all voices across the political spectrum who are not going to get, you know, just dragged along, you know, with this, you know, kind of fast-moving freight train, you know, in order to achieve something for some political effect. It's people who are saying, look, You know, we all want to get the country moving again, but we want to take great care about how we go about doing it. And I think that this is an opportunity to, you know, maybe build the Republican coalition by reaching out to some of those voices and, you know, really look to what are the priorities that we share. And the way that we talked about a lot of these issues during the Bush administration alienated not only our allies abroad, but also lots of people who really should be part of this broad center-right coalition. And I think that Republicans are starting to get that.
Then, Weber, what do you do when you're behind, when you're confronted with a big electoral defeat? Or do you feel that the conservative movement needs to be refreshed or revived?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the only thing I would say encouraging to my party is this is hardly new. I mean, this has happened to our party before. It happened to it after the 1974 election, the Watergate election, in which people, literally serious people, wrote that the Republican Party should go out of business and a new party should start. It happened to the Democrats a couple times after Reagan's victory. So it's not new for a political party to suffer defeat and have to go through the process of rebuilding itself. It's painful because you'd always rather win than lose. It's also very exciting. You get to re-examine some of the premises on which you've based your policies. You get to take old principles and apply them to new problems, and you try to figure out new ways of organizing, which may mean technology these days. So it's, yeah, there should be no shortage of soul-searching on the part of Republicans. There's no way of avoiding it anyway. But it can lead to a very positive outcome, and it does not take generations. You know, just two elections after the 1974 wipeout, the Watergate wipeout, Republicans staged a big comeback in the off-year elections, and then Ronald Reagan won 2 years later for the presidency. So, yes, we have to go through a process of rebuilding and rethinking the movement and the party. The process can begin right now.
We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about the new direction of the Republican Party, what the conservatives need to do now. We're calling this conversation The Loyal Opposition. We're having this conversation with Rehan Salam, Matthew Continetti, and Vin Weber. And when we come back, we're also going to ask our roundtable, what role pundits like Rush Limbaugh play in that conversation? That's in just a minute. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, Tennessee Lady Vols basketball coach Pat Summitt gives her wisdom and talks about pursuing a milestone, her 1,000th victory as a head coach. We'll have that conversation in just a few minutes. But first, we're continuing our conversation about what conservatives need to do now to rebuild the conservative movement and the Republican Party. We're joined by Matthew Continetti, Vin Weber, and Rehan Salam. I want to talk about sort of where's the power center? Who should be leading these kinds of conversations? Clearly, members of Congress play a key role, but then there are a lot of outside players these days who seem to have a bigger megaphone than ever, and one of the biggest megaphones belongs to Rush Limbaugh. I want to play a short clip of something he said recently that got a lot of attention. Here it is.
I disagree fervently with the people on our side of the aisle who have caved and who say, well, I hope he succeeds. We've got to give him a chance. Why? They didn't give Bush a chance in 2000. I've been listening to Barack Obama for a year and a half. I know what his politics are. Look, what he's talking about is the absorption of as much of the private sector by the U.S. government as possible. From the banking business to the mortgage industry to the automobile business to the healthcare. I do not want the government in charge of all of these things. I don't want this to work. I hope he fails.
That's one person. And then you've got the new Republican National Committee Chairman, Michael Steele. Now, I want to play a short clip. I need to say, just in fairness, that his comments here were not in direct opposition to Rush Limbaugh. He was giving his own vision. But I want to play that clip of kind of the tone that he says he wants to strike. And here it is.
Our goal is to build a bridge. We want you at our table. We want to work with you on the big and small ideas of the day. But if your objective is to obstruct this process and to bog down the dialogue with petty craziness, I'm going to knock you over. I don't have time for it. I've got to build a party here. It's not rebuild a party. I've got to build a party. I've got to make sure that it's on a strong foundation. and that we have something of value to say to the American people.
Well, there's a great German word to describe what you hear from Michael Steele, and it fits everything, and it's Zeitgeist, the spirit of the age. And the spirit of the age is building bridges, being together, bipartisanship, and harmony. It's not what you necessarily hear from Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh said two things in that clip that I think are just fundamentally mistaken. One, he said that he knows what Barack Obama's politics are. And I think if you talk to most people, it's very hard to determine what Barack Obama's politics are. In fact, I mean, we haven't had much idea of what he's about in just these 2 weeks. The second thing Limbaugh said, which is wrong, was that he said that Obama's agenda was to enmesh as much of the private sector in the public sector as possible. But of course, all of these things that we're discussing started under the free market presidency of George W. Bush, a man who said that he had to abandon free market principles in order to save the free market system, and a comment that Bush got a lot of criticism for, but which kind of makes sense in a certain way. I think definitely the difference between Limbaugh and Steele is Steele actually has power, and Limbaugh is an entertainer. And Republicans make a big mistake if they're going to view Limbaugh as something more than entertainer, and I think Democrats are going to make the same mistake, because what we're seeing now is a whole rash of liberals and Democrats attacking Rush Limbaugh, trying to make him into the leader of the Republican opposition.
You don't think cultural figures have power?
Well, cultural figures have power, but that's the soft power. I'm a conservative. I like hard power.
Okay.
And Michael Steele has the hard power now. And that's what's going to count in the end is hard power.
Rahab?
I think any political party is going to have a mix of figures. You have some figures who are evangelists. They are a face that you present to the other side in order to win over converts. And sometimes they soften the message in various ways, but, you know, mainly they're there to build bridges, to reach out. And I think that Michael Steele is a brilliant example of this. Here's a guy who is Lieutenant Governor of Maryland. He was someone who is devoutly pro-life, staunch Catholic. Yet when he ran for Senate in Maryland, he was running on issues like public transportation. He was very hard on the Bush White House for their approach to the Iraq War. He's a guy who seemed to really get those middle-class black suburbs of Washington, D.C., where Republicans generally don't get much of a hearing, and that's where he came from. So he actually is perfectly positioned to be an evangelist. And, you know, I agree with Matt about Rush Limbaugh and the kind of role he plays in the culture, but of course you also need a figure like that, one who rallies the troops and one who can get the message out. Now, Obama is going to have to fumble. He's going to have to make a lot of unforced errors, and then someone like Rush Limbaugh is going to be the one who's going to rally the troops, and then someone like Michael Steele is going to make the case to people who are on the other side, on the edge, ready to tip over maybe if someone makes a sufficiently appealing case. So again, they both play a kind of critical role in growing and building a party.
Then bring us home here. What are the top issues or strategies that you think the conservative movement or conservative movement in general and also, I guess, by extension, the Republican Party needs to focus on to be successful in this new environment? Is it issues? Is it tone? I mean, when I talked to Michael Steele the other day, he very much strongly was of the view that this really is a matter of tone. It's the way the message has been delivered. It's not the message. And, of course, there are a lot of people who just don't agree with that. What's your take?
I think tone and language matter a lot. And the best example of what not to do is what Rush Limbaugh did in that quote, which is to say you want the president to fail. I understand what he means by that. He wants the policies he doesn't agree with not to become law. But the average American hears that and they think what you mean is you want America to fail. But more than that matters, too. We have to be able to address the economic crisis in the country coherently and intelligently. And we have to be able, in my view, to address a whole subset of economic and social issues that Republicans haven't liked to talk about much, like the question of mobility and income disparities and things like that. The Democrats are very comfortable talking about. We have not talked about them, and yet we have a lot of things to say about them if we want to. We may not win because we're outnumbered, but we'll begin to plant with the general public the notion that there is an alternative to the way the Democrats are doing it, and then if they stub their toes, and a minority, this is not a cynical statement, a minority has to have some errors committed by the majority in order to get back on top again. If that happens, we'll be in a position to compete.
Ben Weber is a former Republican congressman from Minnesota. He's now a Republican strategist and managing partner of Clark & Weinstock. It's a lobbying firm. Matthew Continetti is an associate editor at the Weekly Standard. He's the author of The K Street Gang, The Rise and Fall of the Republican Machine. And Rehan Salam is an associate editor at The Atlantic, and he is the co-author of Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. They were all kind enough to join us in our Washington, D.C. studios. I thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With Tell Me More, the conversation never ends. We've had two conversations with the loyal opposition. You just heard my conversation with this group of conservative thinkers. Last week, we talked with a group of progressives. But where are you in this story? Do you want to see more loyalty and less opposition, or vice versa? Are there issues on which you want to see the left and right move to the middle? To tell us more about what you think, you can call our comment line at 202-842-3522. That's 202-842-3522. Please remember to tell us your name, or you can always go to our website at npr.org and blog it out.